on the biotech side. What else might happen next?
They started looking at dot-com stocks. Fairly short order.
I don't know what would have happened if Lockhart hadn't misspoke. We would never know. But it's entirely possible that history would have been very different. Serendipitous. So, just a fitting sequel, 13 years later, the ACLU filed suit on behalf of Harry Oster against Myriad Genetics. Peter Meldrum ran that and basically said, genes should not be patented. And the Supreme Court ruled unanimously upholding that. Tanya Simoncelli is now with Chan Zuckerberg Institute, was the lead person on that. Chris Hansen is in the ACLU, she was in the White House. So 13 years later, what Lockhart said was true. By this time, the genomic stocks have been announced at Goldman's, people have been gone. All right, so let me just quickly go through a few other things. Just to give you an idea, here are a bunch of science advisors, starting in 1957, James Gillian, who arguably was the first one who had that title. I want to point out two people in particular, though, the contrast between Alan Bromley and Jack Marburger. Bromley was the Republican worker in the Republican administration. Marburger was a Democrat, and when George W. Bush was having trouble finding himself in the service, finally agreed. The first thing he said, I am not a direct Republican. That's not what you do when you serve a Republican. And the other thing that's remarkable, to show you the difference between Bromley and Marburger. So this is a picture of the White House grounds where the Oval Office is. And then across the alleyway is the Eisenhower, the old executive office building. The vice president's office is there. So I'm showing you the West Wing, it's the Oval Office, the Rose Garden, and so forth. Well, Bromley made sure he had an office in the West Wing. Bromley sat in on the cabinet meetings. Marburger. So I mentioned that Bromley was the one who started this whole economic argument, and then we decided that we would try to emphasize the importance of economic competitiveness. This is some cast of characters who were involved in this thing. Led principally by Noam Augustine, who is the retired CEO of Lockheed Martin, former Secretary of the Army, Chuck Vest, who was at that time president of MIT, with a bunch of members of Congress, Frank Bull, Sherry Bowen, and Barry Gordon. And people on the Senate side, people managed to get the Anyway, long story short, this led to a National Academy report for rising above the gathering storm. The original title was The Gathering Storm. They thought it was negative because the word rising above the gathering is certainly a problem, but it is an acronym as well, RAGS. And then the American Competitiveness Initiative, which Noam Augustine was able to persuade Bush to adopt, and this figure on the lower right, Nancy Pelosi, not tearing up anymore. That was the Democrats' innovation agenda. This would shape American science and technology policy. Beginning in 2005.
So let me just point out something to the story of non-woven gold that are never told. 2009, that was the year Obama took office. That was the Great Recession. And the question was, what do we do about the recovery? So there was something called the America Recovery and Reinvestment Act, ARRA. And a group of us, Tom Zaleel, who had been in the White House under Clinton, economist, Don Lamb, an astrophysicist who worked with Obama in the Midwest, Bert Richter, who was former director of Slack, Mike Nelson, former CFO of the Department of Energy, and we got the green light to come up with a program for a science stimulus. And they gave us marching, and they did transition to the farm to get marching money. Come up with money to go out for 90 days and the returns coming in up to 1 year. Well, we started off with $1.5 billion. And then as they changed the ground rule, we'll go out in 80 days, 90 days, $3.5 billion, finally $5 billion. Tony Lieberman was working with me. Came up ultimately with $5 billion. Shovel-ready stuff for the physical sciences. I was at my friend Rosa DeLauro's house. She's probably going to come and share the appropriations, House Appropriations Committee, if you doubt everything. So Rosa had a sort of a salon every few weeks. We would come for dinner with members of the House. I was friends, so I was invited. And I was talking to one of the people who was there, Anna Eshin, who's a representative of the West Coast, and a very good friend of Bert Richards, who's Slack in the district, and talking to her, and Nancy Pelosi walks in, and she's overhearing the conversation, and she says, Michael, what are you talking about? And I said, well, we've just been developing the administration. She says, how much money? She says, you know, I've been working with Rush and Rush Holt and Anna. Let's talk about what we're going to be doing. I'd love to see what your plans are. How much money do you have? I said, $5 billion. She said, well, why don't you make it $10 billion? This is on Wednesday night. I said, when do you need the information? It's Friday. I went back, pulled a couple all night, $10 billion, not off to your office, and it passes the House with a lot of support from a number of people. Then it gets to the Senate. They need 60 votes, $10 billion for physical science. Carl and Spector, with that kind of ancillary relevant, and so on. Spector says, if you give me $10 billion for NIH, you've got a deal. So they get $20 billion. That's how that happened. This had nothing to do with congressional committees. This had nothing to do with the science community. It had to do with a few people who knew the right people in the right places at the right time. So we got $20 billion for science in 2009. All right, we're almost done. So this, I just point out to you, was the beginning of Bell Laboratories. It started at the Volta Laboratory in Washington. That building still exists. You can go to see it. And then, of course, this is what happened to Bell at its zenith. And then along came a court decision, Judge Harold Green in 1982, broke up AT&T. AT&T had a sweetheart deal, regulated monopoly. Whatever its costs were, you can charge a percent more to recover what you needed to make a profit. The laboratories didn't cost AT&T a dime. But when AT&T was broken up, the laboratories and the directing board a few decades later. So this is a case where the judiciary gets involved. And by the way, I'm not arguing the point that technology has progressed remarkably as a result and innovation as a result of breakup, but it has unintended consequences in this one. All right.
judge whether a person is pro-science is to look to see how long it takes to have a science advisor confirm. There's your list. Sometimes it has to be the Senate, but not when it's extreme. So Jack Gibbons was